I find songwriting very difficult, and I find honesty in songwriting very hard and out of my reach. And there's something so special to me about writing about not my life. I played it for a friend, and we were sitting in the car, and I was like,
Who is that?
Welcome to Off Script with the Hollywood Reporter. I'm Yvonne Orji, and we are here at the Georgian, a historic hotel in Santa Monica, California. Hey, question for you. Have you ever just gotten a song stuck in your head? I mean, this song just makes you want to do a bop, makes you want to groove, it makes you feel so happy, you know? Or maybe it's a song that just really hits you, and then like you're there on the airplane in seat 32B, it's an aisle, and you just start thinking about your ex, and you're like, oh my God, maybe I should call him, but girl, you know, you should definitely not call him. You get what I mean, right? All right, well today you are gonna meet six amazingly talented songwriters whose music and lyrics have made us feel all of the feels this year while watching some of our favorite movies. So sit back, relax, and get your groove on with Jon Batiste, American Symphony, Billie Eilish, Barbie, Cynthia Erivo, Drift, Dua Lipa, Barbie, Julia Michaels, Wish, and Olivia Rodrigo, The Hunger Games, The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes. They are on the record, but maybe just a bit off script with The Hollywood Reporter. Take it away, Mesfin.
Thanks, Yvonne. I'm Mesfin Fakadu, and this is Off Script with The Hollywood Reporter, Songwriters Roundtable. How are you guys doing?
Good.
Thank you. I'm so excited that you all could be here. Such a talented group of people. I know some of you know each other. Some are probably just meeting today,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah.
Perfect. Well, I wanted to ask, as songwriters, do you remember the first song or lyric you wrote? I don't know how old you were, but want to hear some of that backstory. Mm. How about you, Cynthia?
Yeah, I was 16, and I wrote a song called Maybe. I think it was given to like a South African girl group or something.
I mean, I guess the first song that I wrote like on piano proper, I was probably 14 or 15 and I wrote this feminist anthem called Superman, about how I didn't need Superman to come and save
That's
me.
That's right.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Yeah. Start 'em young, so.
On the right track.
Yeah.
Gosh, I mean, when I think about mine, it was completely different. I was always like making up songs when I was really little, and when I was about 4 or 5 years old, I made up the song. Albanian was my first language, and so I sang it in Albanian, and it was a song that I'd made for my mum, and I'd walk around the house, and I'd be like, when I grow up, can I borrow your shoes? And when I grow up, can I wear your dress? And when I grow up, like, can I be just like you? And it actually just, like, stuck around. It's kind of the one thing that, like, at home, we just always remind ourselves of. It was, yeah.
I love that.
That's adorable. I love that.
How about you, John?
Oh, well, I was doing a lot of music instrumentally for many years. And I started writing lyrics for a Shakespeare play that wanted songs in the play. I was probably about 21. And I started writing it. I was like, man, characters and worlds and the expression of all these interconnected relationships and how I can make all these sounds come together. That was the end of it. I love that stuff.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. I think that like what comes to mind is probably when I was like 8 or something and it was like, it was like, I'm going down, down, down into the black hole, sweeping up your soul. And I was like, today. I was like, it's tight.
Banger. Were you going through something at the time as an 8-year old?
Listen, I was writing stories, man. I feel like the first song that I wrote was probably when I was like 11-ish. Or, no. Now that I think about it, I think I was 6, and it was me and my friend, we were playing the ukulele, and it was a song.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month, plus save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details. Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
About ukuleles, I don't know, whatever. You guys have good stories.
Yeah, I don't really have a good story. I started writing like when I was six as well.
Yeah,
just all
bad
the time.
Little
yeah,
songs.
Really, really bad.
Yeah.
Me too, dude. But the first thing I ever like got was this theme song for a Disney Channel show when I was like 17. The show called Austin and Ally.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was my first like, whatever.
I wanted to ask too, what's the first album you remember buying or downloading? I think for some of us, for me it was cassettes and CDs, and I'm older. For some of you, I imagine it's iTunes or Spotify. But do you remember what was that first album that you bought?
Never Say Never, Brandy.
Oof, classic.
I was obsessed with it. Obsessed, and I would play it over and over. I remember I wrote her a letter. I was like 12 or something. And I wrote her a letter because I just was obsessed with her voice. I never heard anyone like that. And I something about the sounds that she was making connected me with me really, really deeply. And I think I bought more than one of those.
Wow. Was this cassette or CD?
The CD.
Wow.
Yeah.
And it's crazy now, so many years later, Burna Boy's
Sitting on top of the world.
Full
which is,
circle.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Don't think I'm not playing that over and over again. I am. It's like a nice little throwback to something that was a really sweet memory for me. Yeah.
Do you remember what was in the letter?
I think I just wrote that she was my favorite singer. And I think I must have thanked her for writing the album or something. I don't know. I just really connected with it. And something about the way she used harmony in her songs was like new to me, so it felt like, oh, I like that. I like what she's doing with her voice. I want to learn to do that with my voice. So yeah, it was really special. Yeah.
How about you, Olivia?
I remember getting my first phone. It was probably like 12 or 13, and the first thing I did was download Lord Pure Heroin.
Mm.
I love that record so much, and I remember listening to it as I first started writing songs and just being blown away by her lyrics that are just about, you know, being a teenager living in the suburbs. And I just remember never hearing my life be put into a song like that, where, you know, it just made being young and doing these seemingly unimportant things feel so sacred and beautiful. And that album's one of my favorites, and she still inspires me a lot to this day.
I remember, you know, when Royals came out, the radio did not have that sound on it. And I think she definitely opened doors to, like, not follow trends and set her own trends.
Completely, yeah. I remember hearing that song on the radio for the first time. It was, like, one of those pinch-me moments where you always remember, like, snapshot memory, like, oh, my God, what is this? It, like, changes the trajectory of your life. But, yeah, that was my first one.
Now, while you guys were speaking, I was thinking it was either between Alicia Keys' Songs in A Minor.
Ooh.
Which I just absolutely love that record. Yes. But it also Whoa Nelly by Nelly Furtado was also a really big one for me. And I feel I wouldn't be able to know really which one came first, but they were like, I don't know, it was something about Alicia's voice and kind of just like the pain and the love and the feeling and everything that she carried with it was so, I don't know, felt really meaningful. I felt like I was going through a breakup having never had a boyfriend. And then Nelly Furtado as well, like, I loved how she mixed her, like, Spanish roots as well with all the music that she made. I loved that.
There's something really cool about the combination of those two singers, because they both have that sort of, that ability to express pain in their voices. So, like, where Nelly Furtado's voice sits is, like...
They have a raw.
It's like,
yeah. Yeah, there's, like,
so
a
I love
real...
that you found it in both of them. It's really cool.
Yeah.
And they both came out the same year. I remember that year they were both nominated for Best New Artist at the Grammys and also NDIRE. So it was like these three super unique, different voices.
They're such strong female artists. Yeah. I think they really had their own identity and they knew exactly what they were talking about and they were just so open with their experiences. And that's why I think people connected so.
Right. Yeah. And all so around much. Like 21 years old. So it's amazing. Yeah. John, what about you? Do you remember the first CD or cassette you bought?
I bought CDs at Blockbuster Video from the used CD bin. I was playing gigs from a young age, so I had some money. I remember I first bought four records. Can't remember what the fourth record was, but the it was a cracked copy of Michael Jackson's Dangerous. And Erykah Badu's Mama's Gun.
Yes.
I love it.
And the, oh my gosh, that record.
So good.
It's like what you reminded me of with Nelly and even just the sound of her voice for sure, but the artistic purpose. Every great artist, like all y'all have such clear, just acutely aware, profound artistic purposes. Every great artist has a great artistic purpose. I'm still trying to figure mine out. But I remember when I heard those records, that's what I heard in every one of them. Oh, yeah, Bjork, Vespertine.
Oh, wow.
That was the fourth one. And Voodoo, D'Angelo. Those four records, I remember that. And I was like, man, it's super, super convicted. Everything about it is very much coming from the most pure channel, that space up there that we all try to dip into. I like that a lot.
That album is crazy.
So in that, when I was checking the liner notes, oh, I remember liner notes.
Yeah.
So you read the thing, oh my gosh, D'Angelo wrote this incredible, just a mission statement in there. And then I looked at it, I was like, oh wow, there's a lot of similarities. Mama's Gun and Voodoo were recorded in the year 2000 in Electric Lady Studios, and a lot of crossover in terms of the personnel. And then I was like, that's why I gotta get to New York. I gotta get to New York City. But yeah, that record, Spanish Joint.
Spanish Joint.
You recorded some of your album?
Yeah,
there.
I made lots of my new album at Electric Lady.
Wow.
It's my favorite place ever. Such good history.
And was it your first time recording there?
Yeah, it was so much fun. I used to like roll my eyes at people when they were like, I love to go to New York, it's like so inspiring. I'm like, sure, like whatever, how inspiring can it be? But getting there, yeah, the vibes are just incredible. And it's very hallowed halls, that studio, you know? Love so much to pull from.
Oh my goodness, you in the right place.
Oh, it's the best. The best.
How about you, Billy?
Well, I had a little blue MP3 player that was like this big. And I remember I had
hit clips.
Yeah, girl. I had I Kissed a Girl in there.
Let's go.
And I was like, noting how I feel about this. But I also, the first song I remember like trying to go buy and then download was Sail by AWOL Nation. I didn't know who it was by. I didn't know what song it even was. And I looked up on iTunes like Sail, and I just bought the first one that I saw, and it was like not the song. And so I had only one song for a long time, and it was Sail by some guy. Some other song. I don't can tell you what it was. But Phineas, my brother, was really mad that I did that. But Sail's sick. That song is tight. But I think like the albums that I first remember like downloading and listening to like front to back were like Green Day, I think, like
American Idiot.
Yeah, American Idiot was a big one for me and my family. Yeah.
It's funny that what you mentioned about Sail. That was such a sleeper hit. I love when
was tight.
A song is released and like 2 years later it climbs, and it's also been licensed literally. TV shows, car commercials, like the amount of money he's made from that song is
that
pretty
is
magical.
Like
you know, and also I love the idea of like not thinking of that when creating the song and it having just its own life in
that's,
it.
That song, like, I don't care what anyone says, like that song is like blew my mind. That song was like the coolest shit I'd ever heard in my life. It like really, I don't know, it really inspired me in terms of just like different sounding stuff. I don't know. I also liked The Walking Dead, and there's a character called Who's the guy? Do you guys watch X-Files?
Yes.
You know when in the first season the guy that gets locked on the roof?
I always pictured him
screaming, ringing a sail. I thought he was singing sail in the song. Oh. I was like picturing him screaming.
I don't know.
Yeah, kids, dude.
Yeah, man. Imagination's just good.
Yeah. So
that's also the other cool thing is like, AWOL Nation has one of the biggest hits, but I'm forgetting the lead singer's name. He can walk outside.
That's what I'm saying. He's good.
That's like the perfect life almost.
Yeah. Pretty ideal.
Great. Mailbox money. Oh, yeah. Hello.
Julia?
I mean, the first album I ever, like, was given for, like, Christmas was Train.
Wow.
I know, yeah, with, like, Meet Virginia on it. Yeah. I just loved that song when I was a kid. Yeah. And then, obviously, as I got older and angsty, Jagged Little Pill was like my holy grail. I just loved her lyricism and just how unapologetic she was. And she was also hot AF.
Yeah. Did you see her in Dogma? Did you watch the film?
No.
There's a film called Dogma. This is me being a geek. There's a film called Dogma, and she is spectacular. She doesn't say a word. I think she's just like a present.
I was homeschooled.
Same.
Yeah.
A couple homeschooled here, right?
Yeah.
Raise your hand if you were homeschooled.
So I think like when you're kind of like isolated and you're like kind of angsty, like she was the one. She was my president.
You obviously all have amazing film songs that have been out this year and writing them and putting them together, I want to definitely talk to you all about them. You, the 100th anniversary of Disney, did a lot of music for them. What was that like? And also, did you do background vocals on Let It Go from Frozen?
I did,
yeah.
Wow.
Wait, hold on. I thought I read that somewhere, and I was like, wait, what?
I did,
okay, first tell us about that, because you were already in the Disney family.
Yes, basically, I think I was 19 at the time, and I was doing demos around the city to sort of meet people and pay my rent. And I got a call from someone that was working on the Demi version of the song. And they were like, hey, we need some backgrounds done for this song. It's for a Disney film. I was like, yeah, sure, like, no problem. And funny enough, 10 years later, cut to, the song that I did backgrounds for, the movie was directed by the same people that directed the film that I wrote all the songs for.
Wow.
So it's just like a very beautiful, serendipitous thing that happened.
What was that
unexpectedly?
Like when you get in the call from Disney to, because how many songs did you write for this film?
I did seven, I believe.
Wow.
For this.
We know Disney songs are huge.
No pressure. Yeah.
And This Wish, tell us about the inspiration and putting that together.
I was told that the protagonist in this film was sort of a young activist. Basically, there was a lot of corruption in her town, and she basically wanted to fight for things that she found immoral or just sort of unjust. And I was like, I can do that. I kind of know what that is. And yeah, that was This Wish.
Nice. It's really beautiful.
It was the first song I wrote for the film,
right.
And it just sort of stood the test of time throughout the 3-year process of making the movie.
Yeah. And what, like after writing that, did that kind of like open the floodgates for you to be able to finish the other songs?
Yeah, it was very interesting. I've never done songs for a film before. I've only ever really written songs with artists or for myself, so this was very new, and the process was new, because I'd be like, oh, I'm done, and then they'd call me 2 days later and be like, oh, we have a new song, and we need it done in, like, 3 weeks. And I'm like, okay. But overall, it was a really beautiful process and so cool.
I know Cynthia's new film, Drift, she not only stars in it, she's produced it and written music for it.
Wow.
So a hand clap there. So I wonder, in addition to the inspiration behind the song, what was it also like wearing so many hats?
Because
I mean, as a producer, I'm sure you were so hands-on with this.
It was nuts, because it was, you know, a little, I always call it the little engine that could, because it was made for nothing, basically, a little indie movie that we made on location in Greece, and we didn't have much time to do it in, so I'm on set, but thinking about the schedule and making sure that we can get shots done when we need to get shots done, but also being able to, like, hey, we need to finish off this scene. Are we gonna have enough time for that? But trying to be in scenes that are really tough, really hard. But the song, I think, was the easiest part for me, to be honest, because it sort of was inspired when I was on a run one morning, and I listened to the song by an artist called Laura Mvula, called Father, and for some reason it connected with where I was at that time, what I was feeling, what I was experiencing, and what this movie was about. And so I knew automatically that I wanted to work with Laura, because I thought she understood the language of where I was and what I was doing. So I texted her. I didn't tell anyone else first that this is what I wanted to do, which is not what you're supposed to do. I texted her and I was like, would you be into working with me on a song for this? She said yes. Then I told them, this is who I want to write this with, and that's what's going to happen. I don't think I gave him a choice. And then we sat in a studio after she'd watched the movie, and she sent me this message. She was like, it feels like there's like water and movement and transition, and she was really moved by it, and so I felt like she understood it. And we wrote this song, and it didn't take us very long to write it. I think we wrote it in like a couple of days. And then she did lots of production on it. And the first thing there's these two chords that she plays, I think on like the organ. It just goes dum, 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 dum. And I was like, oh, I'm there. So as we started playing with our vocals and trying to figure out what it wanted to be, it just sort of made itself, really. Yeah. I'm really proud of it, because it felt like it was the language of the piece that we had made. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Beautiful.
Thank you.
I know you, Olivia. Hunger Games. Everyone is so excited for this to come out. For you, what was the inspiration in creating this song?
It was so much fun. I mean, most of my songs are very like diaristic in nature and kind of about my life, and it was such a fun challenge to get to watch this movie through the eyes of this character and then go and, you know, try to capture her experience through, you know, my words and my voice. I find that there's so much inspiration in restricting yourself sometimes. I don't know if you guys ever have this, but it's like, you know, when you have every color in the palette and any canvas you want, it's just so overwhelming that sometimes I think limiting yourself actually makes you just think outside the box and reinvent. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's one of the joys about, you know, writing a song for a movie, is there's this, you know, beautiful storyline that you kind of get to color in with your own words. So, yeah, I had a lot of fun, and it was a very welcome challenge. So I'm really happy to do it.
And John, you have a documentary that your song is from. So let us know a little bit about the documentary and also writing music for this.
It started out as one thing, and then it changed. Life came into the picture. You know, I started to write a symphony that was premiering at Carnegie Hall, and I wanted to document the process of the last year of going and answering the question of what would a symphony be if it was invented by someone like me in the 21st century. Who would be on stage? What would they play? What would that experience be like? I wrote this piece called American Symphony, so that's the title of the documentary. But, you know, we started to film, and about a month into filming, there was a lot of changes in my life personally, as well as in my career. You know, there was the week of being notified of being nominated for 11 Grammys. It was the week that, you know.
Cash, super cash.
I mean, it was literally happening. People knew about that. They didn't know, you know, my wife, she got diagnosed with leukemia. So we didn't know if she was gonna make it. I remember I got a call from President Biden, and we were in the chemotherapy ward, and he was congratulating me about the nominations while we were getting news about what her treatment would be. So then we decided to keep filming. So it became the symphony of life. You know, like how life has the duality of the highs and lows, sometimes all at once, sometimes extreme highs and lows all at once. So the music in the film is largely the symphony, but there was a moment where Matt and I, the director, we talked about what song would be appropriate as a final statement. It's very moving to think about. So she's doing great now.
I was going to ask, thank God.
Just to preface. But when she was in the hospital, you know, it was about two months where we didn't know if she was going to make it. And in hospitals, all these sounds, you know, it's like beeps and all of these people coming in and out of the room and all of the range of things that disturb your rest. And I believe rest is important for the spirit to heal. And all these things that I wanted to help her with. So I started writing her these lullabies. She's a writer. She would actually listen to your music and your music while she painted. Because she started painting just because her vision was blurred from the medication. So she couldn't write anymore. So her creative outlet was to paint while I would write these lullabies. None of them were meant to come out, but the song came from one of these lullabies that I wrote over that course of 30 or 40 days of being in and out of the hospital. So that's what the song, the ethos of the song is from that period, which I thought was a beautiful way to kind of tie a bow on this work that we didn't know what we were making when we were doing it. And it was hard. We had to reassess the decision every single month. It's like 14 hours a day. This filmmaker, Matthew Heineman, is known for being in war zones and embedded in drug cartels, and he doesn't make films like this. And it was such a part of our life. We'd be in bed, he'd be there. Literally one day I opened the door and I'm in the shower and I'm like, why are you filming? And then he was like, I'm only shooting from the waist up. And I was like, do I really want to do this? But you know, we did it and I think it'll help some people. And that's what I'm about, so it's there. I hope it moves some people. And thank y'all for what y'all do, because I was very aware of the profundity of what we do in her healing process with music and creativity. Creativity as an act of survival. And I believe in that so strongly. I believed in it before, but now I'm just like, let's go. Let's make more beautiful things.
I love that.
Yeah. You know, as creators, what is it like when you do hear that your music has really helped someone in a hard time, really just helping them persevere when it's so hard to think positively?
It's hard to take in.
Mm-hmm.
I find myself like... it's
overwhelmed.
Yeah, I don't really know how to like believe it because I know what it's like to be in that position, and it's so real. And to think that you're helping somebody who's in that is really, it's hard to believe, and it's really astounding and special, and almost you feel like undeserving. Like, I didn't deserve to help you through that. Like, but it's so special and powerful. And
that's a great way of putting it.
You know, like, I feel that way a lot. People say some stuff, and I'm like, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so...
to be a part of someone's, like...
so magical.
Experience.
It's very surreal.
It makes you focus in on the thing that you're actually doing. So there's lots of noise around the actual art of making something, making music, making film, making TV, whatever it is. But when a person has taken the time to listen, to be there, wait, meet you where you're at, meet you where you were when you made the thing, and take that with them in their daily life, and use it as a tool to help them get through whatever they're getting through, you're a part of their lives. You've made something that sticks with them, that they get to carry with them. And that is possibly one of the most incredible honors you can have.
Yeah, truly.
So that anything else is just not important. That is the important thing, making things that people can hang on to when there's nothing else to hang on to. I think to refocus whenever it feels like everything else is out of focus on that, I think that's really, really special.
You're so poetic. It's
like,
silly.
It's from.
I know, hanging on to every word.
It's true. You can just talk.
Yes, yes.
Well, that means a lot, because, you know, for me, it's like, if I'm honest, I don't know that you could have told me when I was 15, 16 that I would be there, that I'd be here, that I could make music and have people listen to it. It was like a pie in the sky dream, you know?
I feel the same.
So when
same,
people
I feel completely the same. I thought it was like as unrealistic as a cartoon on TV. Yeah. Like I would watch artists and I'd be like, oh my God, imagine doing something like that. But never thinking that was even a possibility. But doing this, sitting here, making music, writing songs, putting them out, connecting with people, going on tour, like connecting one-to-one with people in a room. It's such a profound experience that it seems so far from reach, but it's real. And it's so cool that it's real because when there's, you have like younger fans or people looking up to you, listeners, like they can also just see that and be like, oh, that could actually be me too. And it's real. Yeah. It's real and it's possible. And it's so cool to,
especially to as like a songwriter too, like growing up with like Shelley Piken and Linda Perry and Lindy Roth, like all of the songwriters that wrote for like all of your favorite pop artists. Yeah. You're like, how do you do that? Yeah. Like, how do you even get there?
Right.
You know, and then to be able to like know them, write with them, be here is like such a beautiful thing too.
Do you guys think about that when you're writing songs? I find it incredibly difficult to think about it when I'm like actually in the process of it. I think it doesn't hit me the impact of it until like it's months later, like on tour or something.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, how weird does it feel to be called someone's fiancé? The first time you hear it, you do a double take. Your heart kind of flutters. And before you know it, you go from, let's just enjoy the moment, to, we're planning a fall wedding. That's where Zola comes in. Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place and have fun along the way. From free planning tools like a budget tracker and website, to a venue and vendor discovery tool that matches you with your dream team. Everything on Zola is designed to make your wedding journey as easy as possible. And with invites that can be completely customized and a wedding registry packed with gifts you actually want, Zola takes you from save our date to thanks so much without breaking a sweat. From getting engaged to getting married, Zola has everything you need to plan your wedding in one place. Start planning at Zola.com. That's Zola.com.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
I think about this a lot, John, in your Grammy speech a few years ago. You said you were like, I show up every day, I make music every day because it's a spiritual practice for me. Mm-hmm. I think about that all the time, and that's totally what it is. Yeah. If I don't like write every day or create something, I don't feel like myself. I don't feel fulfilled. It doesn't matter if I like put it out. You know what I mean? It's just like, it's something that you need to do, just like breathing or eating or, you know, that's what it feels like.
I feel more anxious when I don't.
Completely. I feel so anxious.
It's like an exorcism that happens with it.
It's like an exorcism.
I mean, like, I feel like for me, like, I think just as creatives in general, like, we have a lot of things that go on in our minds all the time, and so writing is sort of like the deep exhale. Mm-hmm. So just like letting it out, and then you have this sort of tangible thing that you can take with you everywhere. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, it's sort of not in my body anymore. It's here now.
This is how I feel right here.
Yes.
Are you all writing every day normally, or is it when you're like, I'm gonna go create a song?
I try. It's so hard, but
journaling.
I try.
If I'm not writing, I'm writing something. Not writing necessarily always songs, but.
I write songs almost every day.
Yeah.
I love it though. It's like, cool. I just love it so much.
Well, I know we have these Barbie songs that have been just like taken over the entire world. First of all, that whole album is fire.
It's crazy.
So many amazing different songs on there. I want to ask you, do a Dance Tonight, obviously is killing it. What was it like for you putting that song together?
I mean, from the very beginning, the most fun experience. It was something that I hadn't done before. It was a completely new experience.
I don't know. It basically, the way it came to be was Mark Ronson, who's a friend of mine, DM'd me on Instagram.
Which is weird
because also we're like friends, so we text, but he chose that as a form of contact. As a medium, yeah, exactly. And so he hit me up and he was like, I'm working on this film with Greta Gerwig and it's for Barbie and it's possibly the funniest script I've read and I really want you to write the song for the big dance scene in the film. And I was like, this is an absolute no-brainer, like 1,000% yes, like such a big fan of Greta's work and I love Mark, and it was just so such an easy yes. I was, however, on tour at the time, so I was like, okay, when does this song need to be due?
Yeah.
How much time do we have and when can we get in the studio? And I just flew to New York. We went in the studio and we just had so much time like talking to Greta, understanding the premise of the film. And what I loved is what you were saying about the dualities of life. And I think that really comes across in the Barbie film, especially for the people who haven't seen it, maybe. It's like the importance of going and understanding like the deeper meaning of the film is so much about, you know, stereotypical Barbie having an existential crisis and finding out what it's like to be or to experience essentially like the human condition and the way that we are as people and the emotions that we feel and constantly striving for perfection but not quite reaching it, or trying, you know, always trying to, I don't know, we're constantly looking or striving for something deeper in a way. Mm-hmm. And I think when making Dance the Night and Greta saying how inspired by disco she was, I just thought about disco and the community it brings and, you know, the way it brings people together. You know, a genre of music that was such a release when things weren't going well in the world or whatever was happening. It was so freeing to be able to go and release everything that was outside and just enjoy that. And so Dance the Night was created specifically for Barbie's best day ever, which then results in her thinking about death. So it's really about those dualities of life and being able to merge the two together, and that's what I love the most. Like, I love dance crying. That's really like, that's my genre.
Wow.
You know?
It's
great.
There's nothing that makes me feel more of a release, and
yes.
I think there's important to have some like optimism through the, I don't know, through the pain. There's so much happening, so it's good to have music and dance to release, and disco.
When I listened to it, I was like, I was immediately thrown into the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And I love what you're saying about the background that it was on, because that music, that disco was the place that all of the misfits went to.
Mm.
It's where
exactly.
All of the people that didn't feel like they belonged went to. That's where Studio 54 is where everyone went to convene. If you didn't feel like you were normal, if you didn't feel like you fit in and you wanted to fit somewhere and you wanted to connect with someone, that's where they went.
Exactly,
and they listened to that. And so when I was listening to it, I was like, that's what it feels like. It's got that energy in it. It's really cool.
Oh, thank you.
And I love a dance song with good lyrics. I feel like sometimes,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because the melody or the beat can be so good, sometimes you listen to the lyrics and you're like, what? That don't even rhyme. You know? And so I love that, like, with a good dance song with good lyrics, the lyrics are almost hidden,
yeah.
And you catch them later. It's almost like rewatching a TV show or a film and noticing something else.
Yeah,
but
absolutely.
That's what I love about that song.
And my gosh,
as well.
We took so much time to, like, initially we wrote the song and then we went back 2 weeks later and we kind of watched the scene with the song in it, and I was like, wait a second, I need to do some changes,
yeah.
I need to do some lyric changes. And we basically tailored little moments to the moves that were happening in the film so you can marry the moments together.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really fun. It was like a really interesting jigsaw puzzle and something. Yeah, it was really special. But I've just, this whole process with the song and even with the new record, I never wanted to like let go of a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
Before, it used to be like, if I didn't get the whole song that day, then it probably wasn't worth fighting for. I don't know. But now I'm like, if there's one part that I love, I'll just keep digging. I mean, Julia knows me. It's like, I feel like I have dragged her into my madness. But
I love your process. I actually love that about you, because there are so many artists that will like give up on a song after one day if it's not like perfect. And you're the first one to be like, this part is exceptional. I want to make sure this other part is exceptional. And I'm like, yeah, like, it should be.
And you just got to keep digging. And so that's, yeah, Dance the Night did a lot of digging. And
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Y'all killed that. I was privy to see, I walked into the studio with Mark and I saw all of y'all's notes hanging on the wall.
Oh my God.
And
yeah.
He showed me the scene. It was just like the amount of excavation that y'all did. That was very impressive. I really believe in that too. I love that you said that because sometimes you find something that's so great and it's speaking, but it just hasn't met the rest of its tribe yet.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So there's no reason to put it away for good.
Yeah, that's right.
But the way, the intricacy of that scene, he broke it down for me a little bit. Yeah. I hope you're all right with that.
Yeah, of course.
But so I was like, wow. The whole movie is just, the whole Barbie movie is a lot, it's very deep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Existential. It's very Whitman-esque. It's got a whole bunch of stuff in it that's underneath the surface.
Yeah.
That's what I love about a dance song.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What a great lyric. Your lyrics, you always have great melodies, and you always make sure the lyrics reach the level of the melodies.
Thank you.
Because dance music.
My gosh.
People can get lazy.
Yeah. It can be like.
Relying on the beat.
Like, let me write that.
Like, yeah.
Y'all killing that. I love that.
Oh, thank you very much.
I find myself, like, throughout most of my days, it's just, like, in my head a lot. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's catchy, girl.
It's catchy.
It's really good. Yeah. I feel that.
But your Barbie song, girl. Yeah. So what was...
On,
take over, John. Yeah, do it. Do it, please.
Go ahead. I want to know, like, what?
What's happening? What?
I don't know.
Why that progression of notes?
Dude.
It immediately, my heart goes immediately.
Thank you.
Where were you?
That's the first thing that I wrote, was that, like, exact melody. It was, okay, so it was a rainy day in January, and it was the day after we'd seen it, and I was just like, it was dark for me in my life. And my brother and I were working, and we were trying to make stuff for this album, like my album we're working on, and it was just like a day of nothing. It was just like idea after idea after idea of just like, no ideas. Like, nothing was happening. It was like the least creative. We came up with so many different things, and it was an instance where we were like, yeah, we're scratching these. Mm-hmm. Like, this isn't even worth our time. Mm-hmm. And it must have been, I think we were doing that for probably like 6 hours, and it was about, I want to say like 8 p.m., and I was like, all right, well, I'm out of here. Like, this is, I'm gonna go home. We're done for the day. We tried. We're gonna, you know, call it quits. And then he was like, just for shits and giggles, what if we tried to write that song? Mm-hmm. And I was like, you think after the day of like garbage we've just made, we're gonna make a perfect song for something that is so like, that needs something really good? I was like, I don't even have that in me. First of all, I didn't know I would have it in me at all. When it was brought up to me, I was like, I mean, thank you for asking, but I don't know if I can give you what you're gonna need. Like, I want you to have something astounding, and hopefully I can get close to that, but I don't know. And Phineas literally sat at the piano and immediately started playing the dun, 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 dun. And we've been using a handheld mic in the room that just plays like through the speakers instead of like headphones and sitting at the, I never like use a booth or anything.
Trusty,
so I was,
old SM.
Yeah, dude,
SM.
Yes. And so I was sitting on the little couch with the handheld, and he was playing those chords, and it was just like, and then, you know, we were talking a lot about the like falling elegance, or the floating like elegance of her and her ability to, you know, be so smooth and beautiful and perfect all the time. And then, you know, the juxtaposition of her suddenly falling and like can't do everything perfectly. And so immediately it was that I used to float, now I just fall down. And we immediately wrote that, and then I used to know, but I'm not sure now. And I immediately was like, what I was made for. And then we were both like, what was I made? Like asking the question after that. And then we did that in probably like 5 minutes. It was great. It was like the, it was God. It was God. I don't know. It was like some other.
Yeah.
It was just the most perfect
example to me of like true, true, true inspiration and connection.
And it was living in me that whole day, but it wasn't coming out of me. And yeah, as soon as we hit the "What was I made for?" line, we were both like, oh, okay. And it's weird because we didn't, you know, again, we didn't go into it knowing at all what we were going to make or if we were going to make anything. And it was just so clear that we needed to. And like you were saying, Olivia, like, I love writing for, like, film. It's like one of my favorite things to do. Not even just film, but in, like, for something.
Right.
Because the assignment, I really love an assignment. I love a prompt. And for me, you know, I'm listening to you especially and everybody talking about songwriting, and you're just so good at it. And you just do it, and it's easy, and it's fast, okay?
Credits don't lie.
And like, for me, I find songwriting very difficult, and I find honesty in songwriting very hard and out of my reach. And there's something so special to me about writing about not my life. And so when we're writing it, you know, I'm not thinking about my life. I was like, this isn't about me at all. This is just totally about another girl, another character. It has so nothing to do with my life. And I swear on my, like, I swear to God, I never thought about myself one time. I was thinking about a character, and my brother was thinking about a character. And then we wrote basically the entire song that night, aside from the ending verse. And then the next day or two later, I played it for a friend, and we were sitting in the car, and I was like, what?
Who is that?
I was like, this bitch is singing about me. And it was scary.
Oh my God.
Like, I'm like shaky. Yeah. Like, it was scary. I felt like, it was like if you woke up and like someone had taken a photo of you sleeping. And you're like, how are you? How'd you do that? Yes. And I don't know. It was crazy. And I
felt also, I'm talking a lot, but also my brother and I both were in a period of like complete, I don't even think writer's block is necessarily real. I just think sometimes we're not able to pull it out of us. But it was that. It was a period of time when I just had nothing. I had nothing to say. I didn't know how to say what I thought I could say. And we really hadn't written anything in a minute. And I felt really worried. And I was like, damn. I honestly was concerned that it was over for me. Yeah, I gotta be honest with you. I really was like,
because where were you in the middle of this new album? Like, had you been trying for a while?
We'd been trying, and it wasn't really doing what it usually would do.
Right.
Like, in me. And I was honestly like, damn, like, maybe I hit my peak and I don't know how to write anymore. Like, I don't know how to do this. And
crazy.
Thank God for that. That was just your brain of what he's saying.
Try something else.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was like, also your brother feeling this way, too.
Yeah, no, it was very, I thank God for Greta, man. She saved me. Really, honestly, like getting that request, it was like a FaceTime. It was a FaceTime. And it brought us both out of it, and it put us in a just, like immediately we were inspired and wrote so much more after that. And being that honest without meaning to was a lot. And especially when it came out, I was like, it was like somebody like reading your, you know, diary or something.
Did it unlock something in you where like, oh, I actually can be like extremely vulnerable?
Well,
and it be like received.
Yes and no, but yes, because the way that it was received was so shocking to me. I guess I forget that everybody feels the same in so many ways. And that everything we feel, somebody knows, you know?
Yeah.
And like,
might not be the same thing, but it's the same emotion.
It's the same emotion, exactly. Yeah, and I was really, really moved by that. And especially the way that it brought women together was like something that I feel so just proud of.
Yeah.
And I feel so, I don't know, like when it came out and it was such a girl a girl thing. Yeah. I was like, I don't know. It felt really cool.
Speaking of women, how amazing is this table?
Right.
I'm sorry. Like, to like be doing this at a time where there really is like so much camaraderie with women is so. Excuse me, John.
Love you.
But like just like being at a table with people who are genuinely happy for each other is so exciting.
And it's very true.
It really, like, it really is true. Like, I love you all. Like, I want you all to win. Like, it's so sick. Sorry.
I mean, I felt that way when trying to book this and get people. And as I was, like, seeing who had songs, I was like, oh, my God. We could have this amazing young female songwriters and for young women to see all this representation, I think is so key. And so we got it, and John and me. So it works. We have y'all's back.
I saw that when I got the invitation. I was like, I want to come learn from all of you. This is the thing. That's it. I love what you said about the diary and about bringing women together, especially you've been a voice for your generation. So profoundly, but I think that's, people want to read your diary, but they also want to read their diary.
Yes.
They want to read.
And it turns out it's like maybe the same. It's
the same. Totally. That's like, oh, snap. Yeah.
Do you
we really are connected.
Have like a lyric that you feel like is so personal that you're like, they're not gonna, like, should I change it? They're not gonna understand it. And then they get it in a way, they
internalize it.
Like, they see you.
What I was going to say was when you were talking about almost kind of manifesting your own life into the song, does anybody else feel that when you write, you're almost manifesting things that are about to happen?
Completely.
Yeah.
Like when you're about to write something and you're like, should I be putting this in a song? Because I'm going to be saying this a lot.
Like, is this a self-fulfilling prophecy?
Yeah, exactly. I feel that like so much.
I feel like I look back at songs that I relate to now more than I ever did. Like, when I wrote them. I'm like, I don't.
And some songs take on completely new meanings.
That's the one thing. That's true.
I think it's evidence that songs come from the divine, that sometimes they know things that we don't know.
It's so true. It's so true. Yeah. We call it sometimes.
Yeah.
The muse.
Yeah.
Like, we really shows call up. It.
Hello, vessel. Yeah. I got something for you today.
I love what you said, Lydia, about loving writing for movies. And for me, I mean, I think I've only been doing it for maybe 2-3 years, and it's a couple songs here and there, and I really enjoy it because usually I'm in the thing and having to write about the thing that I was in, and so there's this weird sort of like double view that I have to see through, and then I have to filter what I've experienced, what is in the thing, into this singular moment for people to listen to. But it feels like I'm exposing everything I've already been through on the project that I've been through. So it feels like my heart is like beating on the outside of my chest.
You're like naked.
Yeah, but I love that. Yeah. I love that the task is that.
Yeah.
And so there is no choice but to do that. Yeah. And the only way to do it so that people connect is to be as naked and vulnerable as you possibly can.
I know.
I think you don't give yourself enough credit for being as vulnerable as you are. And just because your process is different to someone else's, it doesn't mean that it's not a process still. You understand?
Yeah.
If it takes you a year to get to the album that you want to get to, it takes you a year to get to the album.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it's over. It just means that you're taking time.
Yeah.
It's like building a battery up again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's just how it is.
Therapist. Yes.
Yeah.
Just so wise.
Yeah. I also love, in terms of writing for film, I love a challenge.
I love a challenge.
Because you don't know what you're going to find. And I love a, like, kind of get, like, I don't know if it's gonna, like, I love a not guarantee.
Yeah,
you know, like, I don't know what's gonna
happen. I don't know.
I think for me, I've realized that, like, my whole life is an act of service.
Yeah.
I feel the most, like, of purpose when I can serve something or somebody.
Mm-hmm.
So whether that's, like, an artist or a project, like, I like being there for, like, the making of and being a part of something and knowing that, like, I got to, like, be there for it. Mm-hmm. Like, that's such a beautiful thing.
I mean, you have been a part of so many songs. They have a list of like some of the artists. Let's just do a flex.
Let's not.
Look, Justin Bieber, Selena Gomez, Britney Spears, Lady Gaga, Ed Sheeran, John Legend, Shawn Mendes, Kelly Clarkson, Maroon 5, Pink, Kacey Musgraves, Shakira, Christina Aguilera, Keith Urban, Demi Lovato, H.E.R., Maren Morris, Gwen Stefani, Nick Jonas, Gannon Shay, One Republic, Kelsey Ballerini, Linkin Park, Ben Platt, 5 Seconds of Summer, Fifth Harmony, Haley Steinfeld, Sabrina Carpenter, Little Mix, Zedd, Rita Ora, The Fray, and also Dua Lipa.
Yeah.
Working again.
That's not even everyone. So nice.
Why is it hard for you to listen to that?
I don't know. I think I'm just so used to being like in the background that when someone wants to
it really freaks me out. I said this to another artist before.
But I love what I do.
It's really important for you to be able to sit in the power of being able to make other people's dreams come true as well. That's a really special thing to, I know, but it's a really special and singular talent that you have, and you do yourself and the work you've done a disservice to not just sit in it. That's your work.
I just want to be like a turtle.
But you deserve it all. If you didn't work for it, it wouldn't come to you. You deserve it. It's not you didn't do the work. You did all of the work.
Do you feel bad for being talented?
No. Guilty. Oh my God. No. I don't know. It's such an act of service. I'm not like good with people. I just want to be there for people.
But you are. You're good with people. You are. But I think we assume
can
that
we get an act off of me?
I think it's so important because I think we think that an act of service doesn't include acknowledging the work that we've done. And that is also an act of service because if another young lady is watching you take ownership of the stuff that you've done, you're telling her that it's okay to take ownership of the stuff that she's done.
Right.
That is an act of
service.
And it's important. I think we don't take that into account. It is important for other people to see us. Because women, we don't do it enough to say, yeah, I did do that and I'm really proud of that. Mm. Because another young lady is going to look at you and go, well, if she's okay with doing it, if I'm okay with it, then I'm okay to say, yeah, I did that and I'm really proud of it. Yeah. That is an act of service also. Mm. It isn't arrogance to say, I'm really proud of the work I've done.
And you've done it.
And you have.
All.
Thanks.
And then some.
Thanks. Yeah.
You're good. You're very good.
Okay. Who else? Olivia. Hunger Games.
You know what I'm talking about.
You deserve it all. You're the greatest.
Yeah. So we're close to wrapping up, so we'll do some rapid fire kind of fun questions.
Okay.
So what your go-to karaoke song?
Oh. Wannabe. Spice Girls.
Oh, so good. She did not hesitate.
We don't need another hero, Tina Turner.
Ooh.
Mine's Dancing Queen, ABBA.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good one.
Good one.
I hate singing at karaoke, so I do. Yeah, like my friends hate it. It's all a bit weird, but I do.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger for thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Most tax pros leave a message.
It's Jane. I'm moving on to a TurboTax expert who beat your price. Adam Devine, tell him how I feel.
Hey, tax pro, she's been thinking twice. Best believe TurboTax will beat your price. This is a tax break.
Switch to a TurboTax live expert and we'll beat what you paid your pro last tax season. Make the switch at TurboTax.com/beat your price. TurboTax full service only. Sign up by 12/20/2024 and file by 4/1/2025. Full details at TurboTax.com/beat your price.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Changes by Tupac.
No. Oh, yes! That was on in the barbershop the other day.
Wow. Lose Yourself.
Eminem.
Yes. Yeah.
Nice, good one.
When he came out the Academy Awards a couple years ago and did it, yeah. Wow, it's fire.
That's crazy.
Yeah. How about you,
Billy? I've never done karaoke.
What?
Yeah.
What? And you looked at me like...
Guys,
no, wait,
for a second,
not,
you're like,
not even
what do you know?
You literally said, I don't like to sing.
No.
She was waiting for the rest of the sentence.
The way you said it was great.
Anyway, not like that.
I've never done it.
No, not even at home and like the fake mic, like the...
You know what? I had a karaoke, like, speaker, like box when I was a kid. When I was like six, and it had "We Are Family,"
nice,
and I would sing karaoke that, and it had, what is that, NSYNC song?
It's gonna be me.
I don't know if it was that. I think it was. It was probably "It's Gonna Be Me."
Yeah.
Nice.
It was that and that and also. I Hope You Dance.
Oh wow,
that's a great song.
I Hope You Dance.
That's a good one,
which is like one of my favorite. Leanne.
Womack? No.
Yeah. I think so. I hope we're not wrong, but.
Yeah,
I hope you dance. We Are Family. We Are Family was like the main karaoke one.
With the whole family.
But I've never done like the like standing on a stage.
Right?
We should do that like on our way out.
Yeah.
That's such a
really bad
for me. Jeez. How intimidating to walk into karaoke and it's Billy and Dua.
I just feel like, haven't you heard enough of music?
I don't know. Like I was at a party and they had karaoke and they were like, Billy, you should do it. I was like,
crushing.
It's never fun if the person can actually sing, which is why I tend to just be like, I'll watch.
What about a dream collaboration?
Oh, everyone here.
Yeah. Damn, there we go.
This right here.
Oh, yeah.
A that'd super song?
Yeah.
We are the world.
We did like, there was, we were on a late night TV show and I was asked to sing something and John was playing. And I looked over and said, can you do this?
Yeah,
I could do this. And I loved that moment. So I hope that I want to do again. I'm chasing after you consistently. Like, you're all incredible, let me know.
I remember the first time I heard you sing on Broadway with my whole family. Oh my God. Oh.
It's insane.
Yeah, that's the Holy Ghost. Oh, my God. Hey! I'm derailing the question.
No, it's true because, like, even though things are not about awards, I mean, this woman has won an Emmy, Tony, and Grammy for the amazing work in The Color Purple. It's like you bleed purple. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a gift that keeps on giving, but it's your performance that has allowed you to do that because you just killed it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Really thankful for all of you guys joining. I mean, this is such a dope table. We need to do this again.
Yeah.
Friendsgiving. Yeah. But it cheers to everyone here. Amazing songwriters.
Gosh, with water.
I know. I'm not sure. Wait, water's
really like... Water is life. It's fine. It's fine.
I feel like it's clear.
It's fine.
I don't know about you, but I love seeing so many talented women and a man come together in a beautiful, harmonious conversation. Until next time, I'm Yvonne Orji, and this is Off Script with The Hollywood Reporter.